All right. Good morning, everybody. Good to see you all, as always. So this morning, I want to pick up a little bit on the conversation we had last week around dukkha. It's a big, big topic. And I kind of went down a little bit of a rabbit hole today. So I'll see if I can make some sense about what I want to say. So last week, we talked about dukkha as a task, or as a noble truth, is how we think of it out. The noble truth of dukkha, poorly translated as suffering, sometimes translated as unsatisfactoriness, stress, pain, difficulty, all these words kind of dance around the meaning. The Pali term isn't actually that specific. It's a compound word. Du in ka means empty and difficult. So everything is empty and difficult, which sounds pretty nihilistic to me. So I want to kind of go further than that. So we talked about it as a task, as something to do, which I think is really, really good. Embracing the dukkha. We did that reflection last week on, you know, the fact that we get old, we get sick, we die. We don't always get what we want. Sometimes we get what we don't want. We come into contact with things we don't like. We're separated from things we care about. And this whole psychophysical, this whole life experience is dukkha. The aggregates are dukkha. So we did a meditation on that. So the other way to think about it, and I think maybe the better way to think about it, I was kind of digging through some stuff today I want to read with you, is dukkha as a characteristic. So we know that we typically see dukkha in the list of the Four Noble Truths, but we also see the three characteristics, which really is front and center in the Vipassana world, seeing anatta, anicca, dukkha. Things are constantly changing. Things are, you know, impermanent. Things are dukkha, and things are not self, which is a kind of very core Dharma teaching. But here as a characteristic, so what is dukkha as a characteristic of experience? And how can we understand that? There's one more place we can see dukkha, which is even better than the two I just mentioned, is dukkha as the three questions, which is also known as the teaching, which is mostly what I want to talk about today, the teaching of the gratification, the danger, and the escape, which I'll just kind of talk about that a little bit. So the gratification, the danger, and the escape. I think Batchelor talks about it in After Buddhism, but he calls it something else. He calls it the delight, the tragedy, and the emancipation. This is one thing that Batchelor does that I actually don't like. And I kind of pushed back on him in this when I saw him. I don't like his delight, tragedy, and emancipation. It's too academic. But Bhikkhu Bodhi calls it the gratification, the danger, and the escape. That sounds interesting. And the other thing about this teaching that's very important is the Buddha came to this before he was enlightened. So this was one of the few teachings the Buddha came to in his journey and his process before he woke up. And I'll just read it to you. It's very short. He says, "Before my enlightenment, while I was still a bodhisattva, it occurred to me, what is the gratification in the world? What is the danger in the world? And what is escape from the world? This is the gratification in the world, that the world is impermanent, bound up with suffering, and subject to change. This is the danger in the world, the removal and abandoning of craving and lust for the world. This is the escape from the world." So he's talking about dukkha here as being dangerous, which I think is better than actually unsatisfactoriness or suffering. And so the interesting thing about this gratification teaching, I think, is that when we look at one definition of dukkha that's always bothered me and continues to bother me, and I can't wrap my head around it, is dukkha as unsatisfactoriness. And that means that all experience is inherently unsatisfactory, which I haven't found that to be true at all. Every experience I've had in my life hasn't been unsatisfactory. So that there's a general understanding of dukkha that all experience is inherently unsatisfactory. Now, maybe that means in the long run, it doesn't satisfy us permanently. And that's how the good Buddhist Dharma teacher explains it, is that, well, what he means is they kind of make up some sort of jargon about how it doesn't mean what it says, which is what Dharma teachers are famous for doing. So I have thought about this for years and years, and it's always bothered me until I came across this gratification teaching. So the Buddha is saying that there is gratification. So I think what we're talking about, he's actually acknowledging there is gratification in the world, and he defines it here, I think I skipped over it, is whatever pleasure and joy there is to be found in the world, this is the gratification in the world. Now, I like this word gratification too, because if you think about the world that we live in, the world that I live in, the world that I deal with every day, is we use this term immediate gratification as kind of a colloquial way of speaking about the consumerist culture that we live in, is that we are haunted by this sense of wanting to be immediately gratified. In fact, actually, when you work in substance abuse treatment, one of the skills that people need to learn is to delay gratification. Can I delay gratification and deal actually with the dukkha now? Right? Can I deal with the fact that I'm a little bit... Now, this has been so true for me since COVID. This is my question every day. Can I deal with the fact that I'm a little bit bored right now? And it's fucking nothing to do. Right? Can I deal with that? Or am I going to go have a muffin? Or am I going to go do something that's going to give me some immediate gratification so I don't have to feel bored or lonely or scared or whatever it is that I'm feeling? Usually, boredom is the number one offender lately. I was at my mom's last night and we're talking about it. I thought, can you imagine when we can like all get in the car and go out and get dinner? That's going to be fucking weird. Just going to a restaurant to get dinner is going to be weird. Like, I can't wait. And so I think when we look at it this way, this is really a good framework for actually not only what dukkha is, but how we can deal with it. Now, the problem with the gratification that the Buddha is saying, he says that there is gratification. No lie. Cookies are gratifying. Binge watching is gratifying. Crack cocaine is gratifying. There's a bunch of behaviors you could do right now that would make you feel gratified. Am I wrong? Absolutely not. Here's the problem. It's dangerous. It's not bad or wrong. You know, we're getting out of that stuff. Now, this is one area where we're getting into some non-black and white thinking. It's dangerous. And it's dangerous because it's subject to change. It's bound up with this changeness. And also, it's bound up with repercussions. It's bound up with an outcome, with repercussions. And so this is where he's talking about, this is again, where now we're talking about the second noble truth, craving or tanha, not as being bad or wrong or this horrible thing that I got to abandon, but actually this experience that's dangerous. So clinging isn't bad or wrong. It's just dangerous because when we go for the short-term gratification and we play that game, we're kind of playing a little bit of a kind of low-grade violent Russian roulette because there's going to be some sort of outcome of having done that. And usually for a lot of us, the outcome of doing that is we regret it, we feel bad about it, we give ourselves a hard time for this behavior that we're always engaging in, and we're really not really sure what to do. Now, the other thing that Batcher does, and I really want to ask him if I can ever get him on the phone, is there's this word danger, which the Pali is adinava, which is not a term I'm all that familiar with. Now, Batcher translates this adinava term as dukkha, and I don't know why he did that, because it's not what the word is. It's adinava, which if you look in the Vasudhimagga, which I did earlier today, in the classic stages of insight, there's something called Vipassana Adinava. We all know what Vipassana is. And there's these different insights that we want to have. There's actually a whole list of them. And one of the insights we want to have is we want to see into the knowledge of the unsatisfactory nature of experience, right? And that the gratification is there, but ultimately it leaves us feeling actually not so good. Now, this is also true in neuroscience when they talk about rumination, mind wandering, as they call it. Generally speaking, when we let our minds wander, we just end up feeling bad. And that's just like classic cognitive science research, is that people report and they find that when we just let our mind wander about, at the end of that episode, we just kind of feel bad and kind of shitty and bored and awkward and all those things, right? So there's some danger. There's some danger to this. So when we think about this kind of practice here of a lot of what we're trying to do, I think in the world that we live in, the world that I live in, is I'm trying to see this, actually, everything I'm talking about, being aware of this on the daily. In which ways am I seeking immediate gratification? In which ways am I doing something? Is my behavior right now doing something to feel better because I don't want to deal with, or I don't want to recognize or acknowledge the truth, dare I say, the reality of the reality of the situation. The reality of reality right now is that I'm bored and I really want to do something else, but I can't do something else. And instead of just kind of letting that experience be real and be true and be happening and practicing with that, I have three computers in my house, three TVs, a phone, a refrigerator, a pantry. I got 47 different things that I can do at any given moment to not have to do that. Now, again, is that dangerous? How dangerous is that? So this is where we want to be contemplative. This is where the investigation aspect of Vipassana is in the moment of about to do, the about to do mind, which I talk about sometimes, the mind that's about to do. This is the kind of mind you want to be aware of, the about to do mind. Is, can I just pause into that about to do mind and ask myself the question, do I really need to do this right now? Is it really that bad? Because a lot of times our assessment of the dukkha moment, I notice that my tendency is to register it at a higher pitch than it actually is. So this is why Vedana, feeling practice, can be good. So for me, unpleasant, at my first perceptual experience of unpleasantness, my mind automatically sets it at about a 6. Doesn't matter how low grade it is. This is just bad and I need to fix this. I was like, but the more I practice with it, I'm like, well, okay, really, am I hungry? I'm actually not hungry. Am I bored? I think I'm bored, but I'm actually not really bored. I'm just feeling into, this is where it doesn't bother me so much because I've been seeing it a lot since the COVID. It's just the low grade quality of being unsatisfied. You know, me and my wife, Shannon, call it the gimme gimmies. Like, I'll wake up and, man, I got the gimme gimmies today. I don't even know what I want. I don't even know what the thing is. Just gimme something. Right? I love me some gimme gimmies. I don't even care what, I have no clue what the object is at this point. I'm so enjoying the gimme gimmies. And even that becomes a low grade kind of distraction from just having to deal with unsatisfactoriness. And this is why this has been on my mind, because I've been playing with this a lot lately of just like, God, maybe dukkha as a characteristic, maybe experience is just sort of unsatisfying. Maybe I just haven't wanted to own that. You know, maybe that there's something there that I've always pushed back against because it seems like such a blanket statement. It seems so absolute. All experience is inherently unsatisfying. And I know that the Buddha is not big on absolute, so I've always pushed back against that, but I've been seeing so much of it. And the truth of the matter is, I'm not particularly, in the given moment, I'm not really sure what to do with it. You know, I feel like I should know. It's dukkha. By now, 30 years of this practice and jamming my head in all these Dharma books for these last couple decades, you think I'd have a fucking clear understanding about what we're talking about here, but I mostly don't. The closer I get to the unsatisfactoriness, the what happens on the other side is the hindrances start cooking up. I get the gimme gimmies, or I get a little restless. Or I get lethargic. I get kind of like, fuck it, I'm just going to lay down and not do shit. And then I get filled with doubt. I don't even know, man, about any of this stuff. You know, why am I even bothering with all this stuff? If all experience is unsatisfactory, then, you know, what the fuck are we doing? Just give me a cookie and some Netflix and let's call it a day. Now, for me, this is dangerous because I'll end up with a beer in my hand if I'm not careful. So having those of you who have addiction as part of your experience, this raises the stakes for us a little bit, because for me, the danger is if I let this tendency play out too long, I'll actually destroy everything that's important to me. Now, how long that will take, I don't really know. I don't really want to find out. So then the question becomes, well, what's the escape here? Is there a way out of all this that I'm saying, or what are we doing here? And he says the danger in the world, the removal and abandoning of craving, desire, clinging for the world. This is the escape from the world. So here we are again. The escape from all this is actually the task of the second noble truth. The task of overcoming, putting aside, letting go of, working with the craving and the clinging associated with that gimme moment now, gotta have it now. Now, the other thing that I don't know about, and I need to look into this more, is the gratification, the danger, and the escape. The escape, you know, what is the gratification? There's this word, the world, the gratification of the world, the danger in this world, and the escape from this world. I'm not totally clear about what they mean by world, because I believe Mr. Batchelor uses the same terminology over here. Okay, Batchelor uses the word life. And he says, the happiness and joy that arise conditioned by life. So the happiness and joy that's conditioned by life is the delight or the gratification. That life is impermanent, difficult, dukkha, and changing, that this is a tragedy. And the removal and abandonment of grasping. Chandaraga is the Pali on that one. So again, this always brings us back to trying to overcome in any given moment the pull, the fire of greed, hatred, and confusion, the wanting to have, the wanting to get rid of. And I think I talked about this a couple weeks ago. The delusion here, or the confusion here, I think that's really the hard part. And the reason why I find myself so confused when trying to come to terms with this dissatisfaction moment is because there's gratification in this world, I have that low-grade sense. I'm confused because I'm like, yeah, but if I do this thing, this other thing will go away. What's the big deal? So what if I go buy some Vans on Amazon, or, you know, what if I go, so what if I eat a cookie, so what if I all day long, right? Which is ironically the near enemy of metta, which is giving into self-centered kind of craving. Giving into this danger is the near enemy of metta, because a lot of times it can look like, I'm going to do this because I deserve it. I'm just going to be kind to myself and have a piece of cheesecake for breakfast. And I'm just gonna do something that I actually don't really, really want to do, but it's going to be so gratifying for the 18 seconds that it actually lasts that it will be worth it. And that's the delusion, is that it will be worth it. And we know that it won't, but we don't care. All right. I can't tell you how many times I give. I'm like, I know this is a bad idea. I know this actually isn't going to work. And I know this isn't going to make me feel any better. And I know that I have all the information in my hand, but I don't fucking care. I'm going to do it anyway. You might be familiar with this particular moment, right? And then, you know, and then we kind of, you know, that's sort of how it goes. So I think we're, this, I think, is really what we're dealing with much of the time. That if you really want to focus on something and you really want to try to practice with something on the daily, this is the kind of stuff, I think, where you're going to get the most mileage. A, you're going to see it plenty. You're going to see so much of it, you're probably going to be disappointed at first glance, you know. And then, and also getting out of the trap of trying to get it right. You know, I actually think that, like, just like in Las Vegas, you know, you sit at the blackjack table, the dealer has a 4% advantage. And he's going to win every time. He's going to win in the long run. He's going to win by only 4%. So we don't actually have to get this right all the time. We just need to increase the percentage of success over failure, dare I say. We don't actually have to. This is the thing about understanding, like, the way that Shinzen Young talks about meditation as an algorithm. We don't actually have to fix. We don't have to do right all. We don't have to do it right all the time. In fact, we have to really kind of get out of that thinking. We just have to improve by percentage points, right? Not that many, actually. And then what happens is, as the percentages play out longer, it gets easier and easier and easier. So even 51 to 49 is pretty good. But if you stay at it, you'll get to 60, 40. You'll just improve. I don't think you ever get to 100 and zero, you know? Like I always say, like I did in high school, it's like, I'll take this. I'll take the D as long as it gets me to the next grade. I used to argue, and you maybe not want to trust my thinking on this, but that was always my. I'm like, if all I need is 60 to get to the next grade, why would I get a 90? Why are you doing all this extra work if you can just get by with this? Now, that's probably not the best measuring stick, but some of you actually could probably do good by lowering your expectations, by lowering your measuring stick some. Just trying to get to the next truth. Just trying to get from craving to nibbana, even just a little bit, and trying to alter the kind of the momentum of your karmic inclining. And you probably all have done this to some degree already many times, but we don't. It's hard to track. It's hard to notice these kinds of things. So I think we'll do a meditation on this. So. Again, we will see if we can delay the gratification. And here, because we're meditating, I would imagine for most of you, when you feel into the sense of unsatisfactoriness or however that is for you, whether you feel lonely or sad or frustrated or angry, see if you can let that be there without switching on thinking. Because that's usually what happens. Like, this is too hard. I'm going to think about something. It's like, you know, it's like the vending machine of the mind. I'm just going to have some Amos cookies or some Oreos or some Cool Ranch Doritos or some, there's something in this machine that's got to be better than this, right? It's hard to walk by a vending machine without getting something, isn't it? I really should have something. I haven't eaten much today. So let's just do this in real time and then we can talk about this some more. All right, you can begin by finding an upright, comfortable way to sit. Start and end with the bell. So just taking a moment to connect the mind with the body. So bringing awareness, pouring it down into the physical body as you sit, and bringing awareness to the sensory experience of seeing, tasting, smelling, hearing, touching, and just letting your awareness spread out through sensory experience, feeling the weight of the body, heaviness, temperature of the body, warmth, coolness, energy of your body if you feel tired or restless, comfortable, uncomfortable, rested. And as you bring more awareness to the body, opening to the sensations of breathing in and breathing out through the whole body. Breathing in, connecting and sustaining your attention with the full length of the in-breath. breathing out, connecting and sustaining your attention with the full length of the out-breath, and developing mindfulness of breathing to stabilize the mind for this practice. And as you continue to practice, beginning to bring more awareness to the mind's tendency to wander, to think about, to plan, to remember. And to see if you can begin to recognize or sense that the mind's tendency to wander is driven by a wanting to disconnect. We want to disconnect from the experience because we're bored or uncomfortable or impatient, or we don't like how it's going. And so see if you can begin to notice that when you become lost in the mind or you get pulled into the world of thinking, see if you can experience or notice that as a kind of disconnection, a not wanting to be here. And the mind's searching for gratification or entertainment or productivity within its structure of thinking. And so seeing if we can allow ourselves to fully connect, to touch, to feel and sense into whatever might be happening that feels disagreeable, uncomfortable, unsatisfying. And see if you can let your awareness soak that up with some tolerance, friendliness even. And letting the awareness connect with the sensory experience of the body, sight, sound, smells, tastes. And for now, see if you can just allow that sensing experience to be enough, not needing anything extra, not needing to fix or change anything, but allowing there to be a patient and persistent awareness of the rise and fall of the in and out breath, contact of the body in the chair, the air and temperature on your skin, opening to any emotions that might be present, any hint of sadness, fear, or anger. And also allowing the mind and the wandering to be part of the experience. Seeing if you can witness thoughts arising, streams of thoughts arising, and then allowing them to pass away without becoming hooked or consumed. And continuing to see if you can recognize wandering mind, becoming lost in thoughts, as a strategy to disconnect from the experience you're having. And for the last few minutes, we can practice on these three questions, these three contemplative questions that the Buddha revisits time and time again. And that is, what is the gratification to be found? What gratification do you really think you're going to get from thinking about things, planning, remembering? How much gratification or joy is there to be found in entertaining and engaging thoughts? What is the danger of this world or this process? In what ways is disconnecting from our direct experience, giving in to our habits of thought, in what ways is that dangerous? In what ways does that not serve us here and now? And then asking and reflecting on, what is the escape of that? What is the way out of this endless desire to think, to change, to fix, to control, to figure out, to solve? And seeing if we can rest in this coolness of Nibbana, of a non-reactive awareness. And if you find yourself being hooked in a particular type of thinking, a reoccurring kind of thinking, you can simply ask yourself, what do I hope to get out of this? What do I actually think this is actually going to do? And then letting it go and returning back to the body and the breath and the sensory experience over and over again. And continue practicing escaping from the trappings of the mind that seeks immediate gratification. The mind's tenacious tendency to improve the conditions ever so slightly. Thank you for your practice. And before we get into some conversation, there's a couple of things more I want to read. Because the Buddha goes on after this, gratification, danger, and escape. And this is something that you've all done that I think is important that he says. He says, I set out seeking the gratification in the world. Whatever gratification there is in the world, I have found it. I set out seeking the danger in the world. Whatever danger there is in the world, I have found it. I set out seeking the escape from the world. Whatever escape there is in this world, I have found it. I have clearly seen with wisdom just how far the escape from the world extends. So,